Politics is the last place where we're supposed to be satisfied with the choice between brand A and brand B.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV. Today we're talking with John Avlin, the author of the new book, Wingnuts, How the Lunatic Fringe is Hijacking America. Define a wingnut and give us an example. There's a right-wing nut and a left-wing nut. Give us
there
an example.
So a wingnut is someone on the far right wing or far left wing of the political spectrum. These are the professional partisans, the unhinged activists, the paranoid conspiracy theorists, the people who are always trying to unite us rather than divide us. And there have been many of them throughout our history. I mean, in politics today, you got two congressmen who are two of my favorite wingnuts, i.e. least favorite people, right. Alan Grayson on the left and Michelle Bachmann on the right. In media, certainly Glenn Beck and Keith Olbermann have a lot of parallels. And
describe when you say they're lunatic fringe, what puts them over the edge from decent discussion?
Well, usually it's not actually the figures themselves. It's the fact that they're using incitement and the effects of that. Hate is a cheap and easy recruiting tool. But it can be murder on a democracy, and that is what we are starting to see. We're starting to see the dialogue from these folks, the way it trickles down. We're playing with dangerous stuff. So, for example, Rush Limbaugh says on radio one week, if Al-Qaeda wants to destroy America, they better hurry because Barack Obama's beating them to it.
Right.
And then 10 days later, it's in a sign and a protest. Mm-hmm. And it's the demonization of people who disagree with you. It's the elevation, sort of pumping up hate in the service of hyper-partisanship that I think is really in the process of taking us off the rails. And I just think we need to call it out and confront it.
How is that different than politics as usual in America? In the 19th century, Abraham Lincoln was shown as a baboon or a monkey or whatever. Little Orphan Annie used to attack Harold Gray, the creator of Little Orphan Annie, attacked FDR all the time. What's different and what's new?
I think the reason, we've always had extremes in our politics. We're never going to change human nature. We shouldn't bother to try. The difference is that the wingnuts are more powerful than ever before. And I think there are three reasons for that. One, the parties are more polarized than ever before. So the power has moved from the center to the extremes. Second of all, we've got the rise of partisan media. You had Father Coughlin with a radio show in the past and all that, but now you've got people with national reach, really in many cases repeating stuff that, John Birch Society claims, but reaching millions of people. And actually, instead of getting talking points from the parties, all of a sudden it's reversed. The talking points are actually coming from the talk radio hosts and the TV hosts and going to the parties themselves. And the third thing is the internet. The internet can be an incubator for extremism. It becomes a way for radicalization. You get a bunch of people who think alike, all talking to each other, and there becomes an impulse to try to drum anybody out who disagrees. This is this sort of, the hunt for heretics we see in the parties, hunting for rhinos in the Republican Party and dinos in the Democratic Party. This gets exacerbated to the point where it starts looking and feeling not a little like a cult.
You talk about the push to the extremes in the political process at the same time that actually a large and growing group of people pretty much agree on things, right?
That's right.
We agree on a lot of social issues and a lot of general political issues.
Right. That is exactly right. We are artificially divided in this country. We have been sold a totally dumbed-down version of American politics that divides everything into red states and blue states, far left versus far right. And it's a lie. It is a fraud. It is not actually the way we are. It's not the way we vote. Independents are the largest and fastest-growing segment of the electorate, not Democrats, not Republicans. And independents, if you look at them very closely, professional partisans here in Washington will always try to dismiss them and say, oh, there's nothing really happening here. Don't look behind that curtain. But what you see is that independents tend to be fiscally conservative and socially liberal to libertarian. There's very clearly, and they are sick and pissed off about the hyperpartisanship in Washington. They feel like our politics have been hijacked by people who are screaming at them all the time from both sides. And so there is a mainstream. It is a generational divide, too. Independents are the youngest and fastest growing segment of the electorate.
So if you're an independent and if you're not a wingnut, where do you go to express yourself politically in a system, that is always going to be run by two parties?
I don't think it's always going to be run by two parties. I think that the first thing we need to do is actually start declaring our independence and standing up. We are a generation that's grown up with a multiplicity of choice in everything. Politics is the last place where we're supposed to be satisfied with the choice between brand A and brand B. It doesn't fit the way we live. It doesn't fit the way we think. The parties are trying to prop up. They're playing defense, in effect, with gerrymandering and other things, trying to hold on to power however they can. Fundamentally, they are playing by industrial age rules. They have not woken up to the information age.
So they're like the record companies.
Yes.
Right, in politics.
In the end of the day.
Who are a couple of politicians who you think get it and push or give a hint of what's coming down the pike?
John McCain, before he won the nomination, spoke for a lot of independents. I think, you know, certainly Barack Obama, I think generationally understands the split. I mean, he's been sort of a bridge builder his whole life, right? His whole pitch was, and he's the first Gen X president, right? His grandparents voted for Nixon. His mom was, you know, a 1960s hippie. That he sort of understood that the whole left versus right, black versus white, and analysis of American politics was bullshit. And that he could embody, that was his sales pitch, that he could embody and bridge those divides. And I think that is a generational split. I think the problem we've seen is that he's, his background is as a legislator, not as an executive. And he's had a very hard time changing the culture.
Well, is there anything in him, though, for instance, that would suggest that he cares at all about economic freedom or has a knowledge of the private sector as the engine of growth?
No, and this is the most credible hit on the Obama administration, and you hear this more and more and more, is that there's no one with any private sector experience. Okay. And you have the liberal House leadership in particular. I think they look at the way he campaigned, and they misinterpret his election as a liberal ideological mandate. And then they took the fiscal crisis, and they said, we have unified control, we're going to do Keynesian spending, and get every wish list project we got. They didn't understand that the American people rejected Keynesian a long time ago. And independents have been a deficit hawk since at least Ross Perot. We are angry at overspending. We are concerned about the deficit, the generational theft that occurs, the fact that China owns our debt. These are not incidental geostrategic problems. So they, I think, are from a 1970s and 80s big city liberal culture that has an endless appetite for government dollars. And that's where the disconnect happened. When those folks asserted control of the Obama administration's agenda, independents started abandoning them. Mm-hmm. And so I think, the heart of the Tea Party movement that's libertarian is a fiscal conservative protest. The problems come in when you get the Obama derangement syndrome baked in, and that's when it goes, into crazy town.
So is the Tea Party, kind of avatar of new independent people in America, or is it quickly going into wingnut territory?
I think that the Tea Party movement is a conservative populist movement. I think there's a lot of common ground with independents and many libertarians on anger about overspending, about deficit, about debt. But again, the problem is this Obama derangement syndrome is getting baked in the cake. And, when you got people calling the president, comparing him to Hitler, a communist, the Antichrist. I mean, one of the sections in my book is called How Obama Became Hitler, a Communist, and the Antichrist, where it actually looks at the progress of that rumor and looks who pumped it up, how it took root, because it has got embedded in some folks' minds. That is fundamentally unhealthy.
Even people who aren't Christian.
Yes. Yeah. No. And so that should just be a warning shot. We've seen a lot of these attacks before. The Birch Society, before they were, they just co-sponsored CPAC. Somehow the John Birch Society's back. Mm-hmm. I thought we dealt with them 50 years ago when they said that President Eisenhower was a communist agent.
Sure.
But these ideas, keep getting recycled, and they're getting recycled at a higher level than ever before. And I think that's why it's so important to call out the extremes on both sides, because that's the other problem is, when folks get in a position where they only criticize the extremes on one side, then they end up getting sucked into being part of the problem. Right. So part of my hope is by we standing up to the extremes on both sides, we can restore some sanity and perspective to the politics here, because it's not just a generational grudge match between the baby boomers.
Talk a little bit about the overlap between independents and libertarians.
This is hugely important and not very well understood. When you look at independents, they are in between the Democratic and Republican parties, but they are closer to Republicans on economic issues and closer to Democrats on social issues. What that means functionally is a centrism that is totally aligned with many libertarian principles. These are folks who understand fiscal conservatism, but also individual freedom. When you combine fiscal conservatism and social liberalism, you essentially get a libertarian. Mm-hmm. So I think that libertarianism is actually the new center. I think that is the rising center in American politics. When you look at independents, they are reflecting, to a large extent, a libertarian perspective. Maybe not doctrinaire.
Who are the people that embody that in politics now?
I think it's actually a grassroots movement. I don't think the leadership is reflecting where the American people are. And that's one of the problems. That's one of the disconnects we've got. Our politics do not reflect where the American people are, especially young Americans. 44% of Americans born after 1977 are independent. They reflect a libertarian mindset in many cases. They do not buy into the whole hyper-polarized politics. And that's why our politics are getting hijacked. They're trying to resist this rising tide. But so it's really up to us to reflect that change and put forward a new generation of leaders that's consistent about this. That because, the politics are actually much more consistent than the ideological straitjacket that the far left and the far right tries to put the Democrat and Republican Party in.
I want to thank John Avlin, author of Wingnuts, How the Lunatic Fringe is Hijacking America, for talking to Reason TV today. I'm Nick Gillespie.